You say that an economics of place would shift the focus of economic development in every American city and town to a goal of community self-reliance. So how does that work? Maybe you can define it and tell us how it works.
Well, what I don't mean, just to assure your listeners, I don't mean that a city becomes completely self-sufficient and they erect walls and cut themselves off from the world.
No moats involved.
That's right. That's right. But what self-reliance does mean is that you produce as much as you can cost-effectively locally. Because every time that you choose not to produce something that actually would make economic sense for you to do and instead you import it, you're doing three nasty things to your economy. You're first, you know, making yourself vulnerable to lots of surprises that are outside your control. You know, become very dependent on imports of oil, have nasty foreign policies that the Bush administration is running. Import lots of beef, oops, mad cow disease. The second problem is that you give away what is the fundamental building block of your community economy, which is the economic multiplier. And what the multiplier means is that, you know, here in Auburn, I mean, if we spend a dollar at the local pharmacy and they have people working in the pharmacy who live locally, they in turn spend the dollar at the local grocer gives it to the local farmer. The more times that that dollar circulates within the community, the faster that dollar circulates within the community, the more income, wealth, and jobs. And so when you choose to actually, rather than buy the farmer's produce, not here, but choose to buy it from, say, New York State, you're giving your multiplier away. And you're not only giving your multiplier away, but you're also giving away the taxes that come from each part of the multiplier, whether they're income or employment taxes, sales, property. So to turn that around in a positive sense, the more you do it in your own backyard, the less vulnerable you are, the higher your multiplier, and the higher your tax base to support the public sector. So that's why I try to argue that, you know, if we can diversify our economies, if we can produce as many goods and services locally as possible, that is the route toward economic prosperity.
And that doesn't mean we can't eat bananas anymore.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, because obviously, even if you subscribe to that principle, there are plenty of goods and services out there that you have to import. But here's something that people don't realize, which is it's easy to think of, like, not every city can make air conditioners. Not every city can make cars. But at the end of the day, a major metropolitan area like Seattle probably produces, I don't know, two-thirds or more of the goods and services that everyone uses. That number could probably be ramped up to, say, 80, 85%.
You cite Chicago 100 years ago as an example of that.
Well, sure. Well, Chicago, it's not only an example like other metropolitan areas where there is a high degree of self-reliance today, but also the development of Chicago from a small cow town into a major metropolitan area was largely because the city practiced a form of development that I would call, that Jane Jacobs would also call, import replacement. They systematically looked at where their dependencies were on its imports, and they built industries within Chicago that made them more self-reliant. Now, here is an important point that is often missed in this discussion, which is that as you move in the direction of self-reliance, you still are importing, but you're importing different things that are less dangerous for your economy. Take the example of North Dakota. Suppose that North Dakota wanted to become self-reliant on electricity. Well, they say, okay, we're going to build some windmills. So they build some windmills, and they're no longer importing electricity. But then it turns out that actually they just imported those windmills, so they're not completely self-reliant. So they say, we're going to go the next step. We're going to build our own windmill industry. So they do that. And then they're importing metal and spare parts and other things for the windmills, so they have to build those industries as well. Well, this process never ends. A community, a city, a state is always going to be dependent on some kinds of imports. But the process that steadily tries to find those import dependencies, fill them, develop new industries, diversify the economy. That entire process will maximize your multiplier and maximize your tax base. And it is exactly the opposite of what economic developers are encouraging communities to do today.
Let's go back to the notion of the economic multiplier and talk about how certain towns for years have been doing something to help develop that, to help keep the money in the town. Ithaca Hours, one wonderful example.
Yeah, Ithaca is one of probably about 50 communities in the United States that are printing up their own money and using that as a way of inducing people to buy local. One way of thinking about local currency to help people understand what the use of it is that Walmart would never accept it. And the reason is that because Walmart is pulling money out of the community, they have no place to spend the local currency. But if a business is actually plugged into the local community, if, for example, it's buying inputs locally or it's paying local personnel, and that's a big part of their budget, they'll take local currency because they have ways to use it. So in a way, a business's willingness to accept local currency is a very nice test of whether or not it is a loyal and plugged-in member of the community economy. One interesting side point about the Ithaca Hours is that they really thought their ship came in a couple of years ago when a robber at the local credit union, which trades in local currency, said, "Your money or your life, and we want it in hours."
So that's a good thing. They're stealing hours.
That's right.
Well, that's a mixed blessing. Don's Green River Music, kitty corner from here. They're dying. You know, music store, small town music store. You get the big chains. They come in. They reduce their prices until they drive him out of business. And then when all the small music shops in the area are gone, their monopoly, they raise their prices. And then, you know, basically, they, if we want to, you know, we want to get guitar strings, we have to go to them and pay an outrageous fee. This is obviously the process that's happening all over the country and perhaps all over the industrial world. But won't that open up the opportunity for the next generation of music store salesmen to open up at that point?
Well, you know, there's two ways that Don's and other small music stores can respond to this phenomenon. And if you think about it, this is a kind of response that can exist in almost any good or service. One response is, we're not really going to compete against the chains because what we produce is so high-end or so specialized. You know, you try to create a niche. So you're not producing guitars, but like one producer that I met yesterday in Bainbridge Island, you're producing the finest wood guitars in the world, and that becomes then your way of not only meeting certain local demands, but also you are able to export and survive that way.
It's like a boutique approach.
That's right. The second way, if you decide, well, I'm going to produce guitars or music stuff that's going to compete against the big guys on a lot of different product lines, I think what you have to do is employ a true value hardware strategy. And what's interesting about the true value hardware model is that here you've got a bunch of locally owned hardware stores that are linked together with the true value label. And they've become a national producer cooperative that is capable of buying things in bulk and keeping down prices. One could imagine creating that for every single good that Walmart distributes. I like to think of True Value Hardware as being a model that we can build around a bunch of other key goods and services.
We would use Ace Hardware as a model here in this.
Yeah, that's right. Ace is another one that's organized the same way.
Yeah. But that's just our personal preference. And subsidiarity. Did I get that right? The notion that decisions need to be made at the level closest to the people that they're affecting.
That's right. And subsidiarity is a real fancy word that basically says, do it in your backyard first.
It would seem that everyone's in favor of that. The contract with America, Newt Gingrich and company, and the Democrats, that was the one thing they believed in there was getting rid of unfunded mandates, which would seem to me in support of this concept of making decisions as local as possible.
Well, I think both Democrats and Republicans like to say we're in favor of state and local power. But each of them have made the lives of state and local officials absolutely miserable.
You sound like a libertarian when you say this.
Well, you know, but where I part from the libertarians is that I do believe that there is a role for a strong public policy sector at the local level. And there are some libertarians who think that way, but most of them believe, you know, in no government at any level. And I think that if we were to have true subsidiarity in this country, most of the public sector, not just a piece, but most of it would be at the local level, that we would have very powerful local governments, we would have somewhat less powerful state governments, and we would have, you know, kind of a very lightly populated Washington, D.C. federal government.
We would have a vigorous activity in local politics, too. It'd be very interesting.
Exactly.
Yeah. The quote at the beginning of the book from Wendell Berry says, "The real work of planet saving will be small, humble, and humbling, and insofar as it involves love, pleasing and rewarding. Its jobs will be too many to count, too many to report, too many to be publicly noticed or rewarded, too small to make anyone rich or famous."
Well, I certainly can talk about the last point. Working at this for 5 years, it hasn't made me rich or famous, but it certainly has been rewarding other ways.
You get all the chicken you can eat.
All the chicken I can eat. That's right.
Your work is amazing, and I hope it gets to a much larger audience, and I wish you continued success. Thank you for being on the program.
It's a great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Michael Schumann has been our guest, and the book we've been talking about today is Going Local, Creating Self-Reliant Communities in a Global Age.